Welcome into the official Trailblazers.com podcast. It is February 20th, Friday. Blazers take on the Hawks tonight, second game out of the All-Star break. I'm Gavin Dawson from 95.5 The Game, joined in studio by Casey Holdall, Trailblazers.com, and joined on the telephone by Dave from Blazers Edge. How you doing, Dave?
Not too bad, just detoxing from the big to-do or nothing to do yesterday.
Yeah.
And getting nervous about the Hawks game tonight.
A lot of Blazer fans are detoxing in another way, having to drink away their sorrows, because I know a lot of people were fired up that something was going to happen yesterday, but it didn't. How'd the reaction go at Blazers Edge? Was it like 50-50, people happy against people frustrated, or what?
It's always difficult because the people who comment the most aren't necessarily representative of the whole, but I would say the prevailing feeling seems like, okay, we're willing to wait and see what's going on here. But I think at this point, everybody expects something to be done. I think most people expected that it would happen yesterday, but if it didn't, it'll probably happen this summer.
Casey, can you keep talking while I take my jacket off?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's so loud.
It's so loud. Yeah, I would agree with Dave that I think about 50-50 the sentiment has been, you know, KP did the right thing staying pat, and the other sentiment obviously being they should have done something. I think there's really valid points to both those arguments. Obviously, you know, 99.9% of us don't have any idea really what was actually offered in any of those trades. I mean, we see guys like Chad Ford or Mark Stein saying, you know, this offer is on the table. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is that, you know, those guys have that information because someone told them that information. And someone told them that information for a specific purpose, not because they're friends with Chad Ford or because, you know, they want to get the word out to the public. They're saying things to these guys to influence other people's decision-making. So while, you know, Chad Ford may say, you know, this, that guy, and this guy are available for that guy, you know, that might not really be the case. That might be a smokescreen. I mean, everyone is lying 24/7. For about 2 weeks leading up to the trade deadline, and those lies extend out to people in the media. So, I mean, because that's how a lot of, you know, a lot of those lines of communications are through guys like Chad Ford or Mark Stein or beat writers. You know, they tell a writer one thing, and then that writer goes and tells the other franchise that same thing, and then they come back with something else. You know, it's this kind of shell game that they run. So, you know, if you're disappointed about the team not making a trade, you know, that's, you know, like I said, there's definitely arguments for that, but there's also an argument that maybe the trades that people were saying were available might not have been as available as you were led to believe.
I got you. You know, that's funny you mentioned that about, you know, beat writers and national guys being used as pawns, because it's something that I really thought going into this week when someone would tell me, whether it was someone from out of town, oh, guess what this guy told me, or, hey, you know, I was at the Rose Garden and guess what this high-level person told me. And I'm like, really, am I supposed to take that for face value, or did they tell you so you could go tell all of us and now the entire country thinks that the Blazers think this way? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So a lot of it is smokescreeny. I guess when it comes down to it, I think a lot of people were frustrated because maybe they had this feeling that because a trade wasn't done yesterday with Rafe LaFrance's contract, then that marks the end of our ability to still acquire a top-level talent that can really help this team and be a difference maker in a major way. What would you say to that?
I would say that the opportunity to add a lot of contract, and I mean, I think in a lot of people's minds, contract equals talent, then yes, our chances of acquiring a lot of contract have decreased by letting Rafe's contract expire, which for all intents and purposes, it has now expired. But I think you have to weigh, you know, the cost benefit of, you know, yeah, this guy has a large salary and he's, you know, a decent player or he's a good player. But, I mean, what's he going to be another 2 years when a lot of people think this team is really going to be ready to start making some moves in the playoffs? And if, you know, that player is making $12, $13, $14, $15 million for the next 2, 3, 4 years, and, you know, that player is starting to decline, then, I mean, you have to consider that maybe that's not the best long-term scenario. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are moves that could have made – I'm sure there are moves out there that probably could have made this team better tonight against the Atlanta Hawks, but I'm not sure there's any moves that can make the team better, you know, in 2 years, maybe against the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals.
And that's why the rumor involving Vince Carter didn't get interesting until they started talking about the first-round pick from Golden State that they had. And the deal with Milwaukee didn't get interesting until they started talking about Sessions being involved as well. But right at that same time yesterday, Rudy Fernandez and Travis Outlaw and Jared Bayless's name got started throwing around. And it's like, I don't think any Blazer fans imagined a scenario where it would take Rafe plus Rudy plus Travis, you know, to get Richard Jefferson. It was presented more like Rafe for Richard Jefferson, you know. And now Milwaukee wants to start cherry picking more and more stuff. And I think, you know, something I really talked about this morning is the players on the Blazers roster right now are more valuable to the Blazers than they are to other teams. And not only is that a perception thing, but it's a reality thing as well. It's hard to find guys that match all of the profile characteristics that the Blazers have all put together. And other franchises don't respect, or maybe they don't value that as much as we do here. So it makes it difficult because fans on other teams are saying, "What? Rudy Fernandez is a bench player. Travis Outlaw is a bench player. Why are you guys huffing and puffing about, no, that's way too much? Is throwing in a bench player way too much? Ooh, Portland, you guys think way too much of your guys." Well, in reality, that is kind of real. But on the flip side of that is us saying, well, look, you know, we've developed this culture and these players are definitely fitting it. They're coachable. They each bring a role and a skill set to the team that is really highly valued. And beyond that, one of them's really good friends with Brandon Roy, and that kind of matters. And the other guy, the fans have fallen in love with, and that really matters here, where maybe it doesn't with other teams.
There are a couple issues here, I think. One is, are we done? And I think the answer to that is no. I don't think we're going to go into battle over the next 3 or 4 years with this exact roster. It's too young. There are too many holes. There's too much talent duplication. But was yesterday the day to address that is a separate issue. And the answer there, for all the reasons you guys have laid out, I think was also no. The Blazers still have a reasonable amount of flexibility this summer. This is part of why the Darius Miles contract kind of hit him a little hard, because this would be a complete non-issue if his $9 million weren't on the books. But even with that extra money in there, the Blazers, by either renouncing or rescinding their qualifying offer to Channing Frye, still get $7 million to play with, which is enough to facilitate a lot of these trades for guys making 10, 11, 12, even up to $15 million a year, which is everybody that was talked about yesterday. Plus, there are a few more people who maybe wouldn't have been available yesterday, either because their teams weren't ready to part with them or because of contract reasons, that might be available this summer. So there's enough flexibility to do stuff. You just have to work a little harder at it. But if you're talking these kind of names, the Blazers will work harder at it if that's what they want.
And the next step down after Channing Frye and what you want to do with his contract, then there's options on Steve Blake and Travis Outlaw, right? Which would present
Correct.
The Blazers to get even further under the cap if they wanted. Or beyond that, they could attach a player who, for example, makes $5 million to the $7 million in cap space, and that operates as a $12 million entity in the world of trading in the offseason, right?
Yes. I think Frye's offer, or even just try outright, is the one that gets you $7 million under. But then you got Steve Blake at $4 million, who can be used, you know, to trade. You got Travis Outlaw, $3.6 million. You still have Sergio Rodriguez, who is $1.6 million roughly. So you have some room there. Now you have to guarantee those guys contracts at the beginning of July, before you get into the summer. So unless you try to trade them in the draft or something, you're not going to be able to just cut them. But those, you know, even yesterday we were talking, these are the guys we were talking about trading to get people, along with Rafe's contract. In essence, the same thing is going to happen this summer. You know, it's going to be one of these or two of these kind of mid-rotation players, plus the cap space will equal a player if that's what the Blazers want.
Now, going into the summer with the economy what it is, I would think, you know, turning down the option that you have on Blake and Outlaw and creating more cap space and turning those guys into the free agent market, wouldn't that blank salary slot that you can give away a player be worth more to cost-conscious, luxury tax-worried-about owners? I guess, you know, that would be something maybe you could discuss about him beforehand, before you make your decision on Steve Blake or Travis Outlaw. You know, we can exercise our option and send this guy plus the $7 million, or we can, you know, turn down our option on him and just send you the raw $12 or $15 million or whatever it might become.
Yeah, I don't really think there's a whole lot of chance of either Travis Outlaw or Steve Blake having their options declined, simply because they're both quality players who don't make that much money, and it's worth more to teams, I think, to have a decent player who doesn't make that much money than it is to just have, you know, some nebulous amount of cap space that they bring back in trade through one way or another. So I think that at least those two options are almost guaranteed to be picked up. I mean, Travis at $3 million or $4 million, Steve Blake around the same. I mean, those are manageable contracts for players who, you know,
are worth more than that.
Yeah, or any team in the league is going to feel comfortable plugging one of those guys in somewhere on their team. So I think, at least as far as those two go, I think there's basically no shot whatsoever those options don't get picked up. As far as Channing goes, I think it's probably a different story.
Yeah, and the thing about Travis and Steve is that their contracts will expire after next year, which makes them valuable commodities. If you're just talking young talent, you do have Marchell Webster still in there at $4.3 million. His contract runs to 2012-13, though. So a lot of teams, it seems like any contract that's longer than a year or two right now seems like poison to teams. I mean, you see what New York's trying to do is dump everybody, you know, after next year, and everybody else seems to be following suit. So if you're just looking for cheap young talent, Martell's it's something to dangle out there as well. But Steve and Travis have the added attraction of having expiring contracts after next season.
There's no concern that Martell Webster's in. I mean, he's got 4 years on a contract now, and it's very reasonable at, what, $4 million per season. But if I was a team out there, I'd say, the guy tried to come back from this quirky foot injury, and it seems like every couple of weeks I read that his return has been put back another couple of weeks. Does he have value, though?
Yeah, well, first off, I don't think they gave Martell that contract to trade him. You know, I don't think that – I mean, while, you know, I don't think he's off the table by any stretch of the imagination, I don't think they're really, you know, jumping the gun to make a move that involves Martell. Having said that, though, you're exactly right. I think any team is going to have some reservations about bringing in a player who has missed the majority of the season. And by time, you know, the next wave of trade opportunities come around, maybe he'll have missed the whole season. And with the foot injury, too, foot injuries are, you know, some of the most difficult to heal from in the NBA. So I don't know what the market would be for a guy like Martell, even at a reasonable price and, you know, with the idea that he's still a player who's on the up. But like I said, I don't know how much interest there really is to move Martell at this point in time. I would guess there's probably very little.
Yeah, it would depend on who you got back, I think.
Sure.
If you take back a small forward, you know, a Vince Carter type, well, I mean, gosh, you got to – my money's on Nicholas Batum long-term just because of his defensive ability. You know, then you start getting real crowded in there. You know, some small forward and or some point guard is going to have to go if you acquire players at those positions. So, and it's weird. This is – I think we can all agree – this was a strange deadline as far as in terms of rumors being heard of the like that's not been heard in my lifetime. I mean, some of these names and players going, at least as rumor had it, for, you know, relatively inexpensive prices. Mm-hmm. Now, none of them actually happened, so we don't know if that's true. But even as far as, you know, gauging this year's rumors against past rumors, you never would have heard this stuff even a year ago. So who knows what will happen this summer.
It was interesting that, you know, the Cavs weren't able to make a deal with Wally Szczerbiak's contract either. And apparently, you know, the thing out of Washington was they could have Antoine Jameson, but they had to take Etan Thomas, who's, what, 4 years and $30 million left on his contract, which I guess seems like a lot of money. But like 5 years ago, that's no problem. You know, sure, bring him on. We'll cut him and never even freaking use him. We don't care about $30 million. But it's crazy how cost-conscious everybody has become, and like that really not that much got done at all, despite you know, in spite of the fact that it was the most trade rumor activity, not only that I'd seen on the internet or in newspapers, magazines or whatever, but, you know, behind the scenes, you know, people inside the Rose Garden or sports radio, people from around the country, there was just this real undercurrent. It was almost cult-like of people just almost constantly talking about it. It felt like, you know, being a talk show host in Portland, it felt like our lead up to the Super Bowl, right? By yesterday at like 9 o'clock, I was really so exhausted mentally from talking about this damn thing that yeah. It was great when it was finally over.
Yeah, from my perspective, completely agreed. I'm glad it's done. I'm glad it's over. I'm sure the players are glad it's over. I know the coaches are glad it's over. And I'm fairly certain that Kevin Pritchard and his staff are probably glad it's done with too. I mean, it takes a lot out of everyone, you know, and it's just so much. You know, it seems so futile at times just to be talking about all these just trades and every rumor and trying to stay on top of everything because, I mean, as we saw yesterday, you know, most of the stuff doesn't end up happening and a lot of it is just guys talking and just try to fill people out and, you know, if a great deal comes along, they'll make it. But I think at this point, you're seeing a lot of teams being reluctant to do anything when it comes to salary, partially because, I mean, the salary cap next year is going to go down. So, I mean, you have to take that in consideration when you're taking on contracts this year. You can't look at the salary cap now and say, well, we're at the cap right now, so we don't have to worry about luxury tax next year. It is going to go down next year. So if you're where you're at now and you're right at the cap now, next year you're going to be over the cap. So teams are taking that into account as well. And I don't know that that's something that people are really realizing as much as that. I mean, being in Phoenix over the weekend, people were talking about the salary cap is going to go down, period.
Guy joined us yesterday from the Detroit Free Press, and he said he'd be shocked if Tayshaun Prince was on the roster to start next season. Dave, what do you think? Tayshaun Prince, former Trailblazer. Sounds really awesome to me.
It starts again?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. We'll do it. I think Tayshaun Prince would be a good add to this team. And thank you. You've probably just given me 20,000 more hits today.
You betcha.
Although I banned, you know, I banned trade talk at Blazers Edge for the next couple of weeks, and now you do this.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Dave. Go ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut in.
I'd take Tayshaun. Yeah, and if he could be had at a reasonable price, and he's even one of those guys that you think about trading one of our young bench players for. I think.
You know, we had a lot of fun because Wednesday we did this thing where we went to four different NBA markets and got the inside scoop from like a radio host or a beat writer or whatever there. And then on yesterday we did five cities in one segment and we had a lot of fun and we're going to do it every Wednesday at 7 o'clock now. So next Wednesday at about 7:25, I'll try to dig up something really delicious and juicy and speculate the hell out of it so we can generate a bunch more hits for you guys.
It's
our job.
Who'd you get from the Detroit Free Press?
What was his name? First time I ever had him on.
Cool, okay, dude. Well, doesn't matter. But did he say why he thought he'd be surprised if Tayshaun was on the roster next year?
I said, why? Why would Tayshaun be traded? And he's like, well, because he's a great player. And I was like, well, yeah, no duh. Why would Detroit want to get rid of him?
Yeah, that would seem to be the argument for not trading him.
And he said because they want change. And Tayshaun Prince is one of their best assets, and it's all about Rodney Stuckey. But they're going to go young, and Tayshaun Prince is a guy that they feel is a top level veteran for his position, and they can help bring back young players.
I mean, if that really is the case, if a beat writer feels very strongly that they're not going to have Tayshaun next year, then you know I would assume that maybe there's something there. And if a beat writer in Detroit knows that, then I would guarantee the front office staff of 29 other NBA teams probably know it as well, and. For certain teams that we're interested in following, I would imagine that a rumor like that or even a sentiment like that being out there might keep you from making a trade at the trade deadline if you think a guy like Tayshaun Prince is going to be available in the offseason.
It's funny, though. I mean, if Milwaukee wanted Rafe, Rudy, and Travis Outlaw for flipping Richard Jefferson and Luke Ridenour, what would Detroit think they could get for Tayshaun Prince? You know, do they want Travis Ally and Rudy and Jared Bayless in a first round pick? I don't know.
Yeah, but, he won't come on the cheap. He'll be one of those guys that's not going to be a contract dump. They'll probably start. They're not going to start there. They're going to start at LaMarcus Aldridge, Brandon Roy, kind of territory probably for him. So, I mean, the chances of that happening, I think, are, it's going to be difficult to find a talent match that everybody's satisfied with. But if it could be done with this, you know, starting lineup intact, I think that would be a fantastic addition.
Yeah, what you just said Milwaukee was asking for Richard Jefferson and Luke Ridenour, that's not realistic, period. Mm-hmm. I mean, that if that is really what they asked for, either one, they really didn't have any interest in trading Richard Jefferson or Luke Ridenour, or two, they're completely delusional about the value that those players have out mm-hmm. in the market, because those, I mean, I was commenting on Blazers Edge the other night, Richard Jefferson, there's this notion out there that he is markedly better than Travis Outlaw, and while defensively he might be an upgrade, that it's a minor upgrade at that. He's not the kind of player that is so much better than what we have in this roster now that you jump to make a play for him. I mean, he's just not. And I think, you know, people, especially when a guy plays in Milwaukee, I mean, how many games are people seeing Milwaukee play now? I think people have an idea of Richard Jefferson that dates back a few years, that maybe they're not
when
so
he was
sure.
Running with Jason Kidd.
Yeah, exactly.
Playing
I mean,
Vince Carter.
he's a different player now in a different system, and obviously a change of scenery might do him good, but he's not the caliber of player where you send out numerous young pieces to pick up. I mean, and especially with his contract too. I mean, he's for as much more as he makes in Travis Outlaw, he ain't producing that much more than Travis Outlaw.
Yeah, I think that's why Nate said teams were trying to rob us.
Yeah.
I don't think, you know, you can look at that statement lightly. I really believe that the offers that the Blazers were getting were just so, you know, for the listeners yesterday that were frustrated on the BFT or this morning on the MSP, it was just like, look, trust me, if KP would have done a lot of the deals that were being proposed, you would be really ticked off this morning that he did that, because he would have probably given away two of your favorite players and a Raves contract for a guy that hasn't even been an all-star team in 3 years.
And I think what also hurt the Trailblazers when it came to bargaining is just the notion out there that, one, that they were going to do a deal no matter what. Everyone was saying, you know, they've got this contract, they're going to do a deal. So right there, you got teams coming at you from a standpoint that you need to do a deal, so we're going to try to lowball you. So that's number one. And two, there's just this notion out there that Rafe was such a good chip that they're going to have to trade him. So why should we offer up something really sweet to them if we know they got to trade him? They don't have cap space this summer without Darius, or at least not as much as they thought they would. So we're going to throw junk at him, and we're going to assume they're going to bite because we think they need to make a move. And that just wasn't the case. I mean, you can, you know, it can be repeated as many times as you want, but the fact of the matter is they're not going to make a dumb trade regardless of that piece. And if they don't think that they're going to bring in better than they give out, they're not going to make it regardless of an expiring contract or the cap space coming next year. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, you can go to a Ruth Chris Steakhouse and get steak. If you go to the Old Country Buffet, sign up there will still say steak. But there's a difference. And yesterday we got offered buffet steak, I think. And Pritchard is just holding out to go to the fancy restaurant this summer.
I like a nice New York myself.
Yeah.
I go New York or a tri-tip flank steak. Filet mignon rarely. I mean, sometimes QFC has a great sale on it. But I can't do the country kitchen style steaks.
No. And that's the thing. If you're going to – I mean, if you're out to eat
gross.
Beef,
yeah.
For me personally, I'd rather eat prime rib than a steak. So, I mean, that's just me.
Well,
I love horseradish.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's a date then. Next time we have a good prime rib place over here. When you get over here to watch a WSU game, we'll go out.
I do roll through Dave's neck of the woods all the time, so we'll have to make that happen.
Do you head over to the WSU games?
I haven't usually, but you know, maybe when the Ducks come, we'll see.
Yeah, you don't want to watch what the Ducks are putting out right now, Dave. At least from a from a basketball perspective.
Yeah.
So guys, the Blazers take on the Hawks tonight. They're 13 games above 500. And they're sitting in good playoff position right now. Considering the fact that no move was made, no veteran help is coming. Greg Oden is injured, I don't know how long he's going to be out. Maybe a couple more games. But what do you think of the roster and its ability to make the playoffs? Where can you speculate on what kind of a seeding they would have? I've been saying I think it's seven. I think there's a lot of teams out there, and maybe even eight. Phoenix, I think, is going to completely fall off now that Amari Stoudemire is out for a couple of months with a detached retina. I think they'll go through a little bit of a honeymoon process here with Alvin Gentry, but ultimately that's going to be too big of a blow with a broken down, well, not broken down, but an aging Shaq and an aging Steve Nash and guys that don't have the best injury history. That's going to be so much pressure. They are going to be the ninth team. I think the Blazers come in eighth in a first-round matchup with the Lakers, just because I see Utah getting healthy. They beat Boston last night. Granted, Kevin Garnett was out for the second half, but you know, Denver's not going to give up much ground. They might even challenge San Antonio for the second seed. Houston, I think, with Tracy McGrady's injury, I was talking with a guy down there yesterday, and he said that might make the team even better. And so I can't find a team right now where, A, I think the Blazers are going to finish ahead of them in the standings outside of Phoenix, and B, that I think could beat a team in a seven-game playoff series. That is my thoughts. Seventh or eighth, first round and out. And I'll be stoked that I just get to show up at the RG and feel that playoff energy for the first time in a while.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I don't see a whole lot of chance for us to leapfrog many teams as my cell phone goes off in the distance. You know, I think New Orleans we come out ahead of. I wouldn't have thought that before the season. So I think New Orleans is one team that we beat out. And I agree. I think Phoenix, we probably end up beating out. So that puts you in the sixth seed right there. And I think Houston, you know, we stand a decent chance of beating out as well. So, I mean, I think optimistically, I think fifth seed. Okay. I think that if we improve a little bit over these next 29 games, maybe win one or two games that we're not expected to win, I think we get that fifth seed. We're obviously not going to be at the Lakers. Denver is looking super tough. And by the way, too, about Denver, for everyone who reads national writers and religiously follows them, I want to make the point that almost every single national writer I read said that Chauncey Billups for Allen Iverson trade was lopsided in the Pistons' favor. And I think a couple months later, you can see that's absolutely not the truth. So consider that when you're taking those words of gospel about trades, where they came out on past trades. I think that the Chauncey Billups trade obviously made Denver much, much better. Pistons didn't get any better. You could argue they got a lot worse. So, I mean, take that into consideration. That's also a good proof, though, of how one player can really turn around, you know, a whole season. So there's plus and minuses there. San Antonio playing great ball. Manu's out. But still, I don't really see a whole lot of chance to overtake them. But, I mean, after that, I think it's pretty wide open. Utah is back in at the eighth spot right now. I think they're going to play better ball throughout the rest of the season, just now that everyone's kind of getting healthy and into shape. But I still put us ahead of them. So
you put us ahead of New Orleans, Houston, and Utah?
Yes.
Okay. How about you, Dave?
Yeah, we're looking, I think, sixth. There's actually nine teams in there, so beating out three would be put us in the sixth spot.
Oh, we both think Phoenix is at nine.
Yeah. But didn't we name two others, New Orleans and what, Houston, Dallas, Utah? I think it's going to be a tough order to beat four of those. So I'm thinking sixth optimistically or the best, down to eighth. I still think we're going to make the playoffs. There'll be one of those teams that's worse than we are. But I got to tell you the truth. This game tonight scares me. And it scares me precisely because we've lost a couple in the last week that we needed to win at least one of those. And, you know, the team hasn't been playing really steady. I mean, I know Blake's been out and there have been other things they've been dealing with, but this is not a good time of year to not be gearing up. Everybody else with their eyes on the playoffs is really going to be getting their stuff together, you know, in the next, I mean, we don't even have to wait. It's going to happen now.
Yeah.
And the Blazers might be taken by surprise by that. We need to see the kind of team that came out against that really tough schedule at the beginning of the year and surprised everybody. If we see the kind of team we've seen in January, there's going to be trouble. It's going to be really hard for the Blazers to put together a 5-6 game win streak. It is imaginable, and it would be kind of devastating to put together a, you know, 4-5 game losing streak here, because that's the standings. We're only three ahead of place nine in the loss column. So Blazers can't afford to come out not ready to play.
And, you know, Atlanta's a kind of roster. Bibby and Johnson in the backcourt, big, strong guys. They're going to have a physical advantage against everybody but Brandon Roy. Marvin Williams at small forward has really finally started to blossom after being, you know, a number two overall pick. His game's coming around. And he's even hitting from outside. Josh Smith is a four that can spread the floor and get to the rim. So there's talent on this team, Al Horford as well. I mean, it's deep and it's nice and it's the profile of a team that's going to trouble the Blazers. If it wasn't for Brandon Roy's heroics last year, they would have won at the Rose Garden. So I agree. Tonight's game, you know, I was reading, I think your stuff was maybe yesterday, and you were talking about this 7-game stretch, and 5-2 would be the worst possible scenario. Now they're sitting at 3-2 and could very well lose tonight's basketball game. It's, you know, we're trying to figure out coming out of the All-Star break exactly what kind of personality they're going to show, and how are they going to now join the group of teams that gears up in late February, March, and April, or are they still going to be the young team that kind of sits around and gets punked for the final 25 games of the season?
Yeah, 5-2 was the baseline. 5-2 was the minimum you'd want.
Yeah.
4-3 in this stretch for a team that really is serious about making the playoffs in the thick of this race. 4-3 is a bad sign, and I'm just afraid that that's might be what we end up with. And it's not that the Blazers can't come back. I mean, come on, they've won some games, a lot of games this year that I thought, wow, I can't believe they just won that. But you don't want to be depending on that coming down the stretch. You want to be in the driver's seat saying, no matter what happens, no matter what injuries, no matter what we're feeling like tonight, we're still going to make the playoffs.
Yeah, it's why games like that at Oklahoma City and the game right before the break at Golden State, it's why those games are such those are really tough games to lose, and obviously they lost both of them. And, you know, they really force you to win games that you know, for all intents and purposes, you're not really supposed to win. I mean, they're gonna need to pick up one from San Antonio this week, basically, I think, to really set themselves up right. They got at San Antonio, where they rarely, if ever, win, and then they got at the Rose Garden on the first day of March. You got to get one of those now. I mean, if you had beat Oklahoma City, if you had beat the Warriors, then, you know, you maybe drop both of those and you can stomach it. But after losing both those games, you got to win. You can't lose to the Clippers at home on the 22nd again. I mean, you can't – you lose to the Clippers at home, you're just putting yourself in a position to really falter towards the end of the season. And then, you know, you got all of March where, you know, you got a long road trip. You got games against the Lakers, against Dallas, against Phoenix, against Utah. I mean –
I guess what they do have going for them is at least they're putting their best five out to start the game now.
Yeah,
but you know what? I wish we had Oden tonight. I mean, the rebounding. I think we would have been able to handle Atlanta rebounding with Greg in there. But it scares me having Prisbilla being basically the only bankable rebound producer against that front line. Because Atlanta as a team isn't a terrific rebounding team, but they have some guys who can really go on the boards. And if you don't keep them off, they'll just destroy you there. And I think Greg would have made up for a lot of that. Now it's just we got to hope Prisbilla can hold Rich because he ain't getting much help.
What do you got for us, Case? Any inside info for the listeners regarding Greg Oden's injury?
I got nothing, really. I mean,
isn't it kind of weird that it's still as tense and as – and as swollen as it was this time last week where he had to miss the rookie sophomore game?
Yeah,
it's kind of making me worried.
I would think so. And I think that, you know, while I don't think there's ever a good time to panic, I think that we're reaching the point where, you know, you start missing 2, 3, 4 games. I mean, that's significant. I mean, that's a lot of games to miss, especially this time, you know, of the season. And, you know, I don't really know what do you do to fix a chipped patella besides going in and taking that chip out. I mean, I'm not a doctor. I don't have the slightest idea what the remedy for something like that is. But I mean, we'll know if he doesn't go on this upcoming 3-game road trip. I mean, that right there, he'll have missed 5 games by the time the team comes back. And that's significant, especially this time of the year. So, I mean, it's not good news, regardless of your opinion of how Greg is playing. I mean, he is on this team, and he plays minutes, and they do rely on him when they can. So, I mean, to not have him out there, to not have that, even have that 6 extra fouls in the middle, I mean, that's a big deal.
Having him is definitely a net positive.
Yeah, and I mean,
Most nights. I mean, there's some nights.
Yeah, there's some nights where it's not there, but at least you have that option. At least he's there on the bench, you know, and should the opportunity arise, you know, he can come in and give you something. Now, I mean, there's just nothing there.
The cool thing is if they got to pull that chip out, it should just be a minor surgery, right?
I would imagine, but I wouldn't even have the first idea how to speculate on that.
Yeah, that's we've thought that before. Eh? Hmm. But, you know, the thing with Greg is he even on nights when he's fouling, when he's on the court, he draws so much attention that Joel Prisbilla doesn't. I mean, I love – Joel's having a fantastic career season this year. I love everything Joel has done. I am so grateful we have him. But realistically – the opponent doesn't have to keep a guy on Joel all the time. The opponent isn't going crazy worrying that Joel's going to get offensive rebounds, you know, with his left hand and ram him back home. And Greg does that, and that frees up a lot of stuff for us on the perimeter that just doesn't happen otherwise. And, you know, in the course of a game, you might not see it so much when Greg is playing because Greg and Joel are in and out, and they're not going to switch their defensive technique wholesale, you know, every 5 minutes. But when they know Odin's not in there and they're game planning from the locker room at the beginning of the game, look, we can get out on those perimeter shooters now. That's a whole different ballgame.
Do you follow the Blazers on League Pass then, Dave, from Idaho?
I do.
Do you have DirecTV?
Yes.
And do they have HD broadcasts on League Pass through DirecTV?
Indeed. It's hit and miss. It'll depend on what feed they pick up. But yeah, I would say probably roughly 2 out of 3 Blazer games are high def.
They don't provide the League Pass HD via Comcast. And it's frustrating me because with an HD TV, if you're not watching an HD TV broadcast, it actually looks worse than it would on a regular TV.
Yeah.
You run into that problem?
Yeah, sometimes. Although my TV's good enough to make up for it, so at least I can make out faces. But there's a night and day difference between HD and, you know, and not. And this is one of the reasons that I'm kind of glad I'm out of area, because I get to see every game no matter what, and most of them are presented pretty well. So, you know, it's actually somewhat of an advantage, you know, now that as long as we have Ben at the Rose Garden doing the actual live coverage, there's no drawback to being over here in Idaho.
Do they have an HD NBA TV as well?
Indeed, they do.
Oh, my boy Rick Kamala in HD. I would love to be able to enjoy that.
In HD, yeah.
Oh, you haven't lived till you've seen Rice in good HD.
Man, and I hear you are coming into Portland soon for a Blazers Edge night?
Indeed. That's going to be March 5th. The night starts at 6 o'clock at the Agency down across from PGE Park. And that's the night of the Denver game on TNT. The game starts at 7:30. And we're going to all watch together and good food. And we've got the owner's suite there. And you guys are sure invited to come. If you do come, maybe we'll do a Q&A or something before the game starts.
But it
should be a great time. Yeah, at the Agency.
The party's going to be at the Agency on March 5th.
At the Agency on March 5th. I'll be there.
It sounds good. Sweet. It sounds fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, 6 o'clock, good food. I'll buy you whatever.
Fatty going to be there?
I don't know if Fatty's going to come into town, but Tom in Hawaii should be there and a few other people. I know he's flying over. We got a guy from Hawaii coming over specifically for this night. So
I love the commenter shout-outs. Those are great. I love that. Who else is going to be there? Well, let's see. What other commenters?
You're hoping for Sophia. I know she probably.
No. I didn't want to throw out the Blazer fan one. I was trying to think of someone else. Who? How about Norks Troll? Is Norks Troll going to be there?
I don't know. Some of these, actually, you know, one of the neat things, the Blazers have done us a favor by, you know, with Batum and Sergio and Rudy and stuff. Blazers Edge actually has a significant international following.
Absolutely.
So I don't know. Some of these people are actually, you know, in Spain, Europe, China, Japan, all over the place. So we'll see.
You know, I found out Fatty texted and said his son shares my birthday. I also share it with Maurice Lucas. It's pretty cool.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm sure you're all
sharing anything with Maurice Lucas is not a bad thing.
That's very cool.
Well, I was doing it on the radio this week, and I wanted to apologize to Maurice because I was looking through the celebrity birthdays, and I was making fun of the various people that I shared a birthday with, and I was, you know, kind of saying tongue-in-cheek that I might have been the coolest person ever to be born on February 18th. All in all, I was ignoring the biggest badass in the history of February 18th birthdays, and that, of course, would be our own Maurice Lucas.
Yeah, and you know, 10 years ago, he would have come and put his fist through your throat for that. But it's a kinder, gentler Lucas now, so you're
was
lucky.
He really mean back in the day, or did he just have that persona on the court?
Okay, this is the dude who, when the remember that story about the there were scab refs doing the game in the playoffs because the regular refs were on strike, and this ref was calling fouls on him, and eventually Luke went over, grabbed his whistle, pulled it up to about 6'8", so the guy was on his tippy toes, and said, "You call another foul on me, and you're not going to like what happens." And the ref didn't. So, I mean, that's when you're choking the ref out and the ref listens to you, that's pretty badass.
That's just getting things done, though. You know, I mean, that's just a sign of a man who knows how to deal with people, knows what it's going to take to affect a certain change, and he goes and does it.
Strong communication skills.
Exactly.
Yes, exactly. Precisely. Yeah, I share a birthday with Chastity Bono, as I recall, nice. So I may be up on the cool list, too, I think.
That's Sonny Bono's daughter or something?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
The late Sonny Shares.
Died in a ski accident.
That's true. While he was a member of the House of Representatives, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow.
Yeah.
Anything Gary. Else up at trailblazers.com or any other topics for consideration here, guys?
I got nothing. I did want to talk a little bit about the Gerald Wallace trade that didn't happen, but we'll save that for another day.
Do share.
I don't know. That's not a bad one. I mean, he was the one guy who, to me, because of his age and his skill set, was intriguing. I know about the injury history is a concern, but it's hard not to envision if you're going to have a running team at all. Gerald Wallace streaking down the floor. I mean, that's almost Jerome Kersey-esque there. And so that one had me. That one was one I took a second look at.
Yeah, Gerald Wallace was the guy who I thought would really help this team, and I'm at least glad to hear that there were discussions about
him. I heard
him
it was close on Tuesday.
Yeah, I mean, I think what I read that had on ESPN was that Nicholas Batum was the linchpin for the Bobcats, and they weren't willing to add him in. And I kind of tried to feel out Mike Borden yesterday, talking about, you know, the trades when he wandered around a little bit during the media availability. And, you know, he was talking about how, you know, they like their young players, and, you know, they put in a lot of work to these guys, and they think they can get somewhere. And the takeaway that I had was that, you know, at one point in time, Gerald Wallace was sitting on the Sacramento Kings bench and was picked up in the expansion draft. So, I mean, at some point in time in his playing career, the Kings, while they may have kind of liked him, they thought not enough of him to protect him in an expansion draft, and he gets picked up by Charlotte, and he becomes a very nice player. And, you know, I think that when you look at those trades and you say, well, yeah, they should add in Nick Batum, because, I mean, Gerald Wallace is Gerald Wallace. You know, to a certain extent, that's true. You know, I mean, Gerald Wallace is a nice player, and he could really help this team. But, you know, at one point in time, he was a player who had less value than Nicholas Batum. So, I mean, you know, who's to say that Batum doesn't become, you know, a better version of Gerald Wallace one day. I think that would be, you know, that would be a very nice pickup for the Trailblazers if that happened.
I like his game a lot. I wasn't exactly sure on how he would step into the locker room, you know, because right now it's like a very special type of situation where, you know, it's Brandon Roy's team. It's soft spoken. It's, you know, there's a very, I don't know. Is there a small town feel to this roster? I don't know what it is, but the family atmosphere, could it be disrupted by a star who came in and necessarily didn't defer to it being Brandon's team? That would be my concern with, you know, a lot of the guys that were mentioned.
I think that probably could happen. I know nothing of Gerald Wallace as locker room guy. I mean, I don't have the slightest idea what he's like, so I don't know if that would change. I mean, obviously that's what Pritchard talked about when he talked about making moves during the season. He said, you know, there's an unquantifiable, you know, factor when you bring in a guy midseason. You know, you don't know. I mean, it's possible that he's gonna meld right in and your team's gonna be better, but there's also a possibility that the exact opposite's gonna happen, and then you look like an idiot for making that trade. So, but as far as people coming into the locker room and having to defer to Brandon Roy, I would hope that at this point in his career, very few players would have a problem doing that, because, I mean, at this point, he's a third year, he's a two-time All-Star, one of the rising guys in the league. If you look at Brandon Roy and say, you know, I'm not going to listen to Brandon Roy, or this is going to be my team, not his team, then, yeah, I mean, you don't want to make that trade for that guy anyways, because that's a numbnut. So.
Yeah, I would imagine that was part of the sticking point on Vince Carter, is Vince Carter has the experience and the scoring chops that you don't know that he's going to come in here and fit in. I don't think Wallace, even with his good play, has that kind of cred. And even on his own team, I know he's wanted to be more a part of the offense, but he's kind of a secondary guy, you know, on his own team. So I don't envision that with Wallace, but who knows? I wonder, here's the question. Are we all agreed that other than the big three, are the people that we're just not going to part with, is that Rudy and Jared and Nicholas, or is there someone else on that list, or is one of those players not on that list?
I think all three of those guys are on the list pretty much, and it would take something, you know, very compelling to move off of that. Sometimes I think Travis Outlaw might be on that list too.
I would say that two of those three guys are on the list, and I'm not going to say which one of those two of the three I think is not on that list, but I'm sure they're not beating the bushes to trade any of those guys, but I think two of those three guys, they would really have to find something nice to be willing to trade for. I think one of them, the other one still would have to be a pretty decent trade, but I think they'd be a little more open to considering at least trades.
That means the rest of us get to play a guessing game. Well, I mean, Nick Batum just wasn't traded for Gerald Wallace, so he might be, you know, it's dangerous to assume, but okay, he might be one of them. That leaves a 1-2 shot. I'm guessing Rudy is the more untradeable one, but what do I know?
You know what? Man, Rudy is such a polarizing player, or he's becoming a polarizing player, because he's a great jump shooter, but he doesn't defend. He can create with a pass, but he can't off the dribble. He's player duplicated with Brandon Roy as well when it comes to position. Like, his ceiling in Portland is going to be to win Sixth Man of the Year, right? I mean, that would be his ultimate crowning achievement for his career. But, I mean, really, people love him so much. But what really, he catches alley-oops like one every two or three games now. And he shoots threes really well and pumps his fists. I think Rudy Fernandez right now very much a fan favorite, but as time goes on, he's got to become more tradable at some point.
Well, I think he becomes a better player before he becomes more tradable. I mean, Rudy's shooting a lot of jump shots now, but I think that'll probably change as he gets the feel of the NBA game and gets more established. Two, I think he can create off the dribble. I mean, he's not taking the best shots off the dribble now, but I think eventually you're going to see him maybe be able to get into that painted area and pull up a little more than he is now. Well, he's 23, but he's in, you know, month six of his NBA career. So, I mean, I think there's still a ways to go with Rudy. But I do agree in that there is a lot of roster duplication when it comes to him and Brandon Roy. And if it gets to a point where Brandon assumes more point guard responsibilities, or hell, Rudy assumes more point guard responsibilities, then maybe. I think you are starting to see Rudy start to run the offense a little bit more. I noticed a couple times in the Memphis game, I think when him and Sergio were on the court together, Sergio was passing the ball to Rudy in the backcourt, and Rudy was instigating offense. So maybe you'll see that a little bit more, to try to figure out ways to work both Brandon and Rudy in together at the same time. But I do agree strongly with your point that there is that duplication there right now, and having that duplication would seem to make him a little more tradable than it seems he is now.
I think he thrives in an open game where there's a lot more space to operate, but when things get confined, I mean, he's never going to be strong. You know, he's never going to be a guy that's going to get into the paint and battle for position or fight through pick and rolls. There's always going to be major limitations in his game, I think, athletically. You know, lateral mobility, you know, that's pretty much what you need to defend.
The advantage that Rudy has is he's a three-point shooter who can also do other things. And I don't think we ever want to go back to the era where we don't have a lot of three-point shooters on the court, because if you recall, that was some pretty ugly basketball with, you know, Sebastian Telfair out there, and, you know, Reuben Patterson, you know, what are you going to do when they clog the lane? You just brick shots and run the other way. Life's a lot easier with Steve Blake, Rudy Fernandez, Travis Outlaw hitting a, you know, 400 clip, Martell Webster, you know, in that mix too. So, you know, I think Rudy among those players might be the one who's most likely to be able to stick, just because of the other things that he does.
I think it's an unhealthy affair. You know, I think fans would rather lose with Rudy than win without him.
Ooh.
Oh, that's sacrilege. So, well, we'll see. You know, if for the right, let's put it this way, for the right deal, I'd deal almost anybody on this roster. I think Brandon's untouchable. I think Greg's going to become untouchable. But, you know, I'm kind of a mercenary. I mean, not in terms of not caring about the players, but the purpose of this game is to win. And I want the players who are going to generate wins, and then I will learn to fall in love with them.
Yeah.
It's easier to fall in love with them when they win than it is to stay in love with them when they lose.
That's a great take. Hey, what are do you guys think the chances are that they'll sign somebody else with this roster spot now that they have?
Do they have a roster spot?
Didn't they move Ike Diagu for the trade exception? That
well, Michael Ruffin.
Michael Ruffin is officially a member of the roster.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is the roster.
Yeah, this is it.
Yeah.
Is there any chance Michael Ruffin's going to play?
He hasn't played at all this season. I can't imagine he's going to come in and fight for minutes at this point. I mean, I guess.
But he's going to show up in practice and travel with the team and stuff?
I would imagine. I mean, I don't. I'm not privy to those conversations, but I would assume that. I mean, part of the deal is that he does. I mean, they still need guys to practice. I mean, whether or not Michael Ruffin plays doesn't necessarily mean he doesn't have any kind of value to the team. I mean, if his ankle gets to a point where he can at least get on the court, I mean, he can go out there and bang with guys, and, you know, they need bodies out there. So, I mean, I don't – at this point, is he going to beat out Shavlik Randolph for any minutes? I don't think so. So, I mean, you know, Michael Ruffin, welcome to Portland. Take a seat.
Dave, what's up? Sorry.
You watch. Game-winning shot, game 7 in the first round against the Lakers. Ruffin will be in there because of foul trouble to everybody, and he'll put up the game winner like Audie Norris. He'll Audie Norris everybody.
How fun would first round against the Lakers be? I mean, I know it would probably be 4 games, you know, maybe five games, but it would be so much fun just to get a taste of, you know, playoff basketball against the Lakers again. We were spoiled.
I think we take them to six, however many home games we would have before.
Yeah.
We would lose for them winning their home games. I think we would take them too. Because, I mean, we play the Lakers incredibly well in the Rose Garden, period.
Yeah.
I mean, they haven't beat us here in some time, if I'm not mistaken. So, I mean, as far as the Lakers go, I like that matchup. I don't like us to win that matchup, but I like us to at least be competitive in that matchup.
Probably better than San Antonio.
So more so than like San Antonio or even maybe even Dallas, you know?
I don't know, man. I'm watching the Lakers, it's been weird since Andrew Bynum's injury. Everybody's stepping up around them, and they're starting to get a playoff swagger about them already. And at such a high level with Lamar Odom stepping up, and the two-man game with Powell and Kobe without Bynum clogging it up is back and beautiful. And I know I'm saying a lot of complimentary things about the Los Angeles Lakers, but I get the feeling now, right, that they're the favorites. You went Boston at the beginning. They went out incredibly crazy. Then for a while it was Cleveland, and now the Lakers appear to me to be the favorites in the NBA. Grand scheme of things.
Agreed.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. As a fan, I may dislike the Lakers. I mean, they're a good basketball team. You can't take that away from them. So, I mean, if you want to be...
But the Hawks took the Celtics to 7 last year, so why couldn't the Blazers take the Lakers?
Yeah, I think maybe the Hawks took... Well, I mean, hopefully we would have the same thing going for us, which in that series I feel like what the Hawks had going for them is that the Celtics just assumed they were going to roll in and the Hawks were going to lay down for 4 games and they were going to move on to the next city. That didn't happen. Hopefully the Lakers, if we did play Lakers in the first round, hopefully they'd take that same stance, which, though they wouldn't, because Lakers know the Trailblazers are a quality squad. Phil Jackson's never going to allow his team to come out and think to themselves that they're just going to go out and get W's without having to play well. So I don't think the same reasons that the Hawks took the Celtics to 7 games, I don't think those would be the same reasons the Blazers possibly could do it, but I think they could.
The arena rocking.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Any playoff game in Portland is going to be off the meat hook, but, I mean, a playoff game in Portland against the Lakers, I mean, there's going to be people hanging from the rafters.
Yeah, there are a couple cool things about it. One is a 5-game series would feel like a victory of sorts, and let alone 6 games. That would feel like we won it. 2 is, if the Lakers are going to march to glory here, I can just turn off the playoffs at a certain point and go do other things, which after a long season would be kind of welcome, because I ain't watching the Lakers win at all. I'm sorry. I refuse to do that. So, you know, hey, if we're not going to win it, they can go ahead, have their time now, and, you know, we'll see them again in a couple of years.
And that's going to be awesome. This is going to be sort of like... you know, the Pistons button up against the Celtics for a couple years, or you know, the Bulls bumping up against the Pistons for a couple years. It'd be great to build the tension as Kobe gets a year older every year to go out and, you know, the first round to him this year, then next year the second round, and then in a couple years the Western Conference Finals, and finally the Blazers exorcise their demons and defeat the Lakers in the Conference Finals, and then go on to the Finals. So, wow, I can really get myself worked up quickly about dream scenarios like that. You know what would make it even a bigger dream is if for some way they get Shaquille O'Neal back. And then they could completely exercise the 2000 demons with a sweep, a beatdown.
I just want Lamar Odom to be around because I love that interplay between Lamar Odom and LaMarcus Aldridge and really the rest of the team. How I don't know what happened in Lamar's life in Portland at one point in time, but he's got the ass at the Trailblazers and wow. Shows every time they play. And I think it's fun to watch.
I mean, he really loves trying to bully us.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's just something about this team. I don't know if maybe... You know, he got a taste once that they were scared, and he takes it to him every time. But, I mean, I think it's fun. I like the Odom comes at the team with that because I think it gets him to react.
Speaking of rivals, is anybody else glad that the Tyson Chandler turf toe kept him out of Oklahoma City?
Absolutely.
That was great. And what would have been really great is if they would have found a way to move him to the Pacers like was rumored yesterday about 11:30. That would have been awesome. You know, I was glad to see Tyson Chandler leaving New Orleans, but then I was kind of bummed that he was going to Oklahoma City to team up with Jeff Green and Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant. Then I was kind of happy that he went back to New Orleans in the end because, I don't know, I think the Blazers match up well with New Orleans as they are currently constructed. At the same time, though, if he gets healthy, it'll be real interesting. You still are dealing with one of the best three guards in all of the NBA in Chris Paul. But in New Orleans, yeah, or in Oklahoma City, yeah, that was definitely a daunting thought to consider the Thunder putting those four together plus a top five pick in this year's draft. For crying out loud.
Yeah, well, the problem I had was with Prisbilla and Chandler having, you know, a rivalry, that was going to make us rivals. And I don't want to be rivals with one of the worst teams in the league. I mean, I want to be rivals with the Lakers, not the Thunder. So yeah. I'm kind of glad he went back.
You know, my whole approach with the Lakers is I don't want to be the D-Rays pretending like I have a divisional rivalry with the Yankees. You know what I'm saying? I mean, the Lakers have won so much, and we are to them just another team that thinks we're chief rivals with them. Like the Jazz, yeah, they think they're rivals of the Lakers. The Kings, the Lakers, the Suns, the Lakers, the Spurs, the Lakers. I don't want to be that team. That is, you know, is trying to put themselves in a peer situation with the Lakers. So I think Laker hating to some extent, it like proves an inferiority complex.
I think you're right, but I think in about 2 years that's going to change when we leave them on the bottom of Greg Oden's sneakers on the way to the NBA Finals. I think that they'll wake up and consider us a rivalry. And really, I think some people in L.A., the people who have watched basketball, know that Portland is on the rise, and Portland is going to be one of those teams that they're really going to have to take seriously in the next couple years.
All right, guys, let's get out of here. What's the latest at Blazers Edge, Dave?
Talk about wrapping up the trade deadline and looking forward to this game against Atlanta, so we'll have to see.
All right.
Okay, so. About the same for me, just previewing tonight's game. Got some thoughts from Kevin Pritchard and Nate McMillan yesterday's trade deadline. And that's really about it. Just wrapping up All-Star and looking forward to the next 29 games. Keep it hot.
All right, so the Blazers will take on the Hawks tonight, the Clippers on Sunday, then one more game next week, and then we'll be back for the podcast. Wednesday next week, you think? Or Thursday?
Wednesday.
Always Thursday. Yeah.
Always Thursday.
Always Thursday. Dave is correct.
Yeah.
It's always Thursday.
Thursday at 9:30?
Thursday at 9:30, somewhere around there. Yeah.
All right, sounds good. So until then, for Dave from Blazers Edge, KCTrailblazers.com, I'm Gavin Dawson from The Game. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks for listening.